Oh, my goodness. My name is Polly Pistol, and I'm an alcoholic. By God's grace, in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977, and for that, I am eternally grateful. I have a home group, and that's the West Connect Group in Jacksonville, Florida. And we meet on Monday night at 7 o'clock, and if you're in Jacksonville, come see us. We have a really rocking, very, very enthusiastic home group. I have a sponsor, the amazing Miss Rena Kay, and she has a sponsor, and her sponsor has a sponsor, and so on and so forth. And I just want to say that I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I got sober, I got sober at a treatment center. And what happened was, in that treatment center, they started bringing people in, and they started taking us to meetings. And I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. So I love being here. Thank you so much, Dick and Barbara. And I know you pretty much do this, just the two of you. You put it together. You guys do this, and it's just amazing. Just amazing. I want to thank our first speaker on Thursday night, Miss Mildred. Miss Mildred, you are the most amazing woman, and I am so grateful that you're my friend and that you're my mentor. You have walked ahead, and you have absolutely blazed a trail. There is no question about it. Linda. I love you, Linda. And Barbara, our Al-Anons here who did the butterfly meeting. And I get a little reading from you every morning, and I'm just so grateful for that. And thank you so much. And what can I say about James and Jane? Am I blessed or what? I am blessed. I have a son who absolutely, he is leading me now. There was a time when I was leading him. But you know, the evolution of life is that he is leading me now, he and Jane. And Jane, I love you so much. And Angus, oh my gosh, Angus. And you have no idea how excited I was when this marriage was taking place. It was absolutely fabulous. Sonia. I don't know where Sonia is, but Sonia is amazing. She came to visit us about 2 weeks ago, I think. I can't even remember. Time eludes me. But she is amazing. She came and she prepared a lot of meals for Dave and I that all I had to do was just take them out of the refrigerator and stick them in the oven. And she is amazing. Plus, she sings like an angel. Absolutely sings like an angel. And whether you know it or not, or if you realized it, all those songs that she's singing, she wrote. She is a songwriter and a singer. Watch me miss somebody. Ralph. Oh my gosh, Ralph. I love you, Ralph White. Even though I loved Ronnie first. Ronnie calls me his sister. And we always call each other sister and brother. Very good friends with his brother, Ronnie. And I'm so honored that I have been so accepted into the White family. Thank you so much. You're an amazing, amazing member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Ralph asked me to be to come to his meeting that he has. I had no idea what it. I just thought I was going to a meeting to talk. And I said, when we got there, I said, "Well, how much time do I have? Because I'm very I want to make sure I don't talk, you know, I just am, I'm into that, very careful about that. And Ralph said, honey, you're not going to, I don't think he said honey. He said, Polly, you're not going to talk. I'm going to interview you. And that was a night. Thank you for that experience. Now, did I leave anybody out? Because if I did, I didn't mean to. Bob Bazans. Of course I would do that. Because you're the forefather of us all. You're the man now. You're the man. We've had the men. We've had them all. And we've had Chuck. We've had Tom. We've had Sandy. We've had a lot of men that have been holding the flag, the top, you know, right there. And it's you, Bob. Whether you want it or not, honey, it's you. You're the man. I love you so much. You're taking this pack of sickos and you're leading us down, you know. You're leading us. And my husband, Dave. Sweetheart, I watched you go through so much. And I love you so much. It's been a ride. And I think about what AA has given us. It gave us each other. We didn't do it exactly right. I just ran away from home and ran off with him. And that's what I did. That's what I did at 3.5 years of sobriety. I just left home and went off with a man I fell in love with. And we've been married for 42 years. And David's had a rough few years. And he's got a, you know, it's just the way it is. And our life has changed a lot. And probably doing 8 and 9 is that I just, when you deal with someone who is ill and has problems, it goes from your heart's just so full of love that you can't hardly stand it, taking care of them, and the next minute, I am so angry, I'm going to kill him. He falls, and he's, you know, his instinct, because he's done it all his 87 years, is to get up and walk. But he can't do that. And it's embarrassing, and it causes him, you know, it's really hard for him to have me push him in a wheelchair. So we've had a lot of changes, and it's been, some of it has been, you know, spiritually growing, and some of it has been not so good. So I'm going to talk a little bit about steps 8 and 9. And probably these have been the most amazing steps in my life. These have been the steps that I began to really love Alcoholics Anonymous even more than I loved it before. And I did the top of the iceberg, or you want to call it, very early in sobriety. And I made a list of all the persons that I had harmed, and I became willing to make amends to them all. I wanted to do that. And my first inventory and my first amends list wasn't very long. I made most of my mistakes sober. Not most of them, that's not true. I made some embarrassing mistakes sober. But my first was, I needed to make amends to my two sons. And, I know that I had this amazing sponsor, and he had been a priest, and he had left the priesthood to marry an Asian woman, and he was beautiful. And Frank had gotten sober at Long Beach Naval Hospital And those of you, and I know there's some that are sitting here, that knew the amazing Frank Honeycutt. And Frank Honeycutt was his sponsor. And, I mean, what would happen is Dave would take a job in California. And I had heard a woman speak by the name of Dottie Harris in Austin. And I said, when I was three, and I said, if I ever am anywhere where she is, I'm going to ask her to sponsor me. And as soon as we got to California, I called in her group and got Dottie's name, and we went to the Big Book group in Bellflower, California. And I hooked up with Dottie Harris, and she was my sponsor for 33 years. But as God weaves a path that sometimes we have nothing to do with, Frank Honeycutt and Dottie Harris would be the two most influential people in my life for all those years. And Frank Honeycutt had sponsors, Frank Fitzpatrick, who was the man that was my first sponsor and took me through the steps. I mean, it's, how does that happen? How do things like that happen? And it's that old thing, it's not odd, it's God. How does that pattern get wove like that? And when I hooked up with her and found out she knew my Frank in Hearst, Texas, and then I would hook up with Frank Honeycutt, who would become my husband and my son's sponsor. And to this day is the finest man. He is so fine. And I can remember a woman in AA saying, I can't think of anybody who's ever said a bad word about Frank Honeycutt. That's the kind of man he was. He was just amazing. And Dave and I got to do that. We got to be with these people, and we got to learn from these people. And I don't know how I got off of that, Jack, but what I had when I did that first inventory with my first sponsor, Frank, I had my two sons, my mom and dad, the United States Air Force, and I can't even remember the next one. I hate my mind these days. I've got to start loving it instead of not liking it, because I forget things. And anyway, and the Baptist Church. I can't believe I couldn't remember that. The Baptist Church. And what has happened is I have made peace, and I have seen how amazing the life I had as an Air Force officer's wife. It was an amazing life that I had no idea that I would look back and say, those were some of the most amazing times of my life. And you talk about people hanging together. This was the end of the Korean War and the Vietnam War. And our guys were gone for 6 months. They were gone 6 months. They were home, and then they were gone 6 months again during the Vietnam War. And we hung together, wives and kids. I mean, everybody was everybody's family. It was just amazing. And I think back on that time of how you have those kind of friendships. We had no family. We were all there together. And it was just an amazing time. So I see that when I had looked at the other stuff, he was gone all the time. He ended up getting really sick because he had to go to Vietnam. He got Agent Orange. It caused him to have congestive heart failure, and he was 36 years old. And you stand there and you say, things like that aren't fair. It's just not fair. And but you look back and you think, oh my God, were those beautiful times. Did we do things that were amazing as we hung together? As wives and kids, that's what we had, wives and kids. And the Baptist church, I just never felt like, you know, I just never could be good enough for that church. And it was always, thou shalt not do something. And I loved to dance. I was a dancer as a kid. And I loved to dance. And, you know, that was, I mean, it's just all craziness. And Dave got really sick. And I have a friend named Vicky. And Vicky said, do you mind if I ask Gary to come pray for Dave? And Gary started coming to pray for Dave. And Dave was in the hospital for 20 days. And Gary came every other day to pray for Dave. And I fell in love with Gary. And I fell in love with who he was. And I loved the God that lived inside of him. And shortly thereafter, Vicky said, Polly, would you like to come to church with me? And I said, yeah, I'd like to do that. And I went to church with Vicky, and I listened to Gary do a sermon. And it wasn't any sermon like I had ever heard from a Baptist preacher. This man was totally full of love, and it just exuded from him. And I want you to hear another trick. Dave and I are now members of Southside Baptist Church in Jacksonville, Florida. So all those things that you think were the things that were hurting you turn out to be the things that you loved. My parents, I had fabulous parents. I'm an only child. And I had fabulous parents. But what happened was, is my parents didn't have a lot of money. And so my mother worked. And so I was a latchkey kid before it was ever popular. Nobody's mother worked. I'm 82 years old. Mothers didn't work then, but my mother did. And so I would come home, and I would be by myself after school. And but nobody could come play at my house because my mother wasn't there. So I felt alone. And I cannot, if the people who know me, I can't get enough people around me. I love it. And a lot of people will say, are we going to go somewhere just us? Or don't invite anybody else. Because what I do is I get the whole room. Because the more, the better. I love it. I love people around me. I love it. And I didn't realize that that had as much of an impression on me as it did. But I'm going to get to that in a minute. So my mother sometimes just wouldn't stand up for herself enough, and she let people run over her. And I have realized by some help that my children are giving to me, that I have that same character defect my mother had. And sometimes I don't realize it because those people feed me so much and make me feel so good that I don't realize that sometimes it's hurting me, taking all my energy and taking all my strength. And I didn't realize that. And when Dave got so sick, and I have to be his caregiver, I can no longer do that. But I don't want to stop doing that. That's like, that's, you know, that feeds me. But what happens is it also drains me. So that has been something I'm really learning about, that I'm having to learn at this age, learn to do these things like Mildred saying, these things that are happening now. And she was talking about being scared. I don't know, I might have said this already. I was just nervous as a cat on a hot tin roof to get up here today. I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm going to say. I'm probably going to have a brain fart and forget everything. And, you know, it's just, you just do those things to yourself. So I'm having to learn to live differently that I've lived in the past. And some of that is just really, really hard. Really, really hard. Because there's nothing that has fed my soul like being able to go to a conference and being able to get on an airplane and fly somewhere. And, you know, you meet friends along. I mean, I'm just looking at a row of friends I met because of that. And you get to have that in your life. Well, that isn't in my life very much right now. I could come here this weekend because I could bring Dave, and it's just too hard for him to do the other things. So my life has changed, and I can't do it anymore. And I want to do it, and I can't do it anymore. And it hurts my husband, and it hurts me, because he can't stand being the reason I can't go. And the thing about it is, I probably could go if I had a lot of money. But I have to get someone to stay with Dave, and that costs a lot of money. So I can't do that. So obviously, I'm not supposed to. I'm not supposed to. And sometimes it's hard for me to have to live right what's happening now. And that's kind of where, you know, I am. And I've been upset by it. I've been embarrassed by it because I'll accept an invitation to go speak somewhere. And lo and behold, comes a time and whoever was going to help me with Dave can't do it anymore. And so I can't go. And then I get mad because I can't go, and then I get mad at him because he's sick. So a lot of character defects and a lot of amends start piling up. And I have to, you marry a guy and he's a backpacker and a rock climber and a kayaker. I can still see Dave down at Birch Bay throwing that kayak on his back and throwing it in the bay and going out. And I know he still has that Dave in him. And it's hard. It's hard for him to not be able to do that. So what has happened is life has changed a lot. And I'm one of these people that love Zoom. I absolutely love Zoom because I got to see people all the time. I got to see them. It was as if I were there. And I didn't have to go there physically. And so lots of, you begin to see that you think, I never thought that this would happen, but it has happened. And now what happens is that you have to learn to live with it. And how do you accept things that are that hard? I only know one way. You better have a relationship with that power, whatever you want to call that power. For me, it's God. It's God. That power's God. And I've got to have that God with me all the time. Because what happens is I'll get that phone call and somebody will ask me, to come do something, come speak at a conference, and I can't do it. And then I get that resentment inside, and then I get angry with my husband. And I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be that person. I don't want to have bad feelings for anybody, anywhere. I don't like that ick. I had bad feelings for someone. And I'm so glad today that I don't have that bad feelings, and that other person doesn't have the bad feelings either. And that's what I'm grateful for, that we have a program which teaches us how to have relationships and not have a bad feeling. Now, I can't stand to be unkind to anybody. Now, I have no problems having a fit of anger, and I don't mean to do it, but I can just go like that with my husband and with my two sons. I haven't done that too much since I've been sober and they've been grown, but they sure saw a lot of it when they were little. A lot of that person that's inside of me that gets so angry. And I don't want that person. You know, I've got to constantly be aware that that person lives there and keep her from getting so angry. How am I going to do that? I'm powerless over that. I would never say something to somebody I love like the things I have said. I would never do that. I would never mean to say something like not too long ago, and Mildred talks about being transparent. The only way I am going to make it through this life is to be transparent. That's all. I can't hide anything. And I looked at Dave, and it was a difficult time, and he wants to be more independent than he is. And with the disease of Parkinson's, the mind doesn't want to talk to the feet, and the mind says he can do it, and the feet won't do it. And he falls, and it's bad. And so we were going through this hassle one day of trying to get him up off the floor, and I looked at him and I said, "You hate your life, well, I hate mine too." I don't mean things like that. I don't mean things like that. But at the moment, that horrible thing came out. And what happens is once it's out, you cannot take it back. He'll forgive me, but he'll never forget it. He'll never forget it. And that's the whole thing. That we've talked a lot. Mildred talked about it. And I learned this. I just did a really in-depth step series with a man named Marty J. And it has been the deepest steps that I have ever done. And what he says is what happens to us as a child never leaves us. It's always there. So what happens is we'll place it in different ways. A lot of what Mildred said, exactly what she said, what happens to us as a child. One of the things that God gave me was very loving parents. My parents loved me. I have no doubts about that. But my parents had to work and they left me. And and a little kid takes it differently than you see it as an adult. But that thing is with me. And what happens is I get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I fall in love with AA. And I start running to conventions when I am a few months sober, because I have people taking me there. And I love them. I absolutely love them. And then one day I got asked to speak at one. And then one day I got to go and do it a lot. And so what happens is I love that, but I want that, all those people around me. And sometimes I can't have that now. So what happens is you learn to live a different way and to accept a different way of life. And it hasn't been easy for either of us. It's not easy for Dave. Dave could never, I know, imagine yourself ever being in a wheelchair. And certainly not imagine me taking care of you. But that's our life today. And it's very hard. It's very physically draining. It's very emotionally draining. And I'm a person who likes a lot of AA people in my life. I like to sponsor a lot of people. And I'm on the phone a lot, and I'm talking to people that I sponsor, and people who love me are coming to me saying, this is draining you. You can't do this. You can't do that and do this. You can't do them both. Because what's happening is it's killing you. And I don't like to hear those kind of things. Because I don't want to give up that. I don't want to give that up. I don't want to give that up. I can't wait till those girls call me on the phone. I don't want to give that up. But I can't do it. And I've had to. And I've had to say, you know, I had to, my son sent out an email for me to all the women I sponsor. Because I just had to take a break. Because I just nearly cracked up. And I didn't even see it coming till it came. So it's just those learning things. I love what Mildred kept talking about, and that is that discovering that stuff that's below the level of our consciousness. And that's what's happening. Maybe it's our age. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's this season of my life. I'm in the winter of my life. It's the season of my life. And that stuff that's inside of me, below the level of consciousness, is starting to bubble itself up. And my life is different today. It's just different. And what I'm doing is, I'm trying my best, you know, to ride with it and to go with it. But the one thing that I know that I want to make sure that I do, and that is that I be the very best wife to a husband who has done nothing but support me. And I would go weekend after weekend after weekend after weekend. And all they would do is support me with what I was doing. And I just want to be the best caretaker for him I can be. And that means I can't do those things. Learning and experiencing that stuff that lives below the level of consciousness, that because it feeds me. So it's all about me. And I'm not going to, until I get rid of the self, I have to get rid of the self. And that's what's happening for me. So step 9, I want to get, that's kind of, step 8 is a big step because it helps you reflect and go in. I never thought of it as a big step when I first got sober. I just thought, these are the people I have, you know, that I owe amends to. I wasn't the nicest mother. My son has, over the years, Mom, get over it. And because I was, you know, I abuse my children. There's no other word for it. And they are there for me. And it's been amazing. Let's just see what I'm doing here with time. Oh, I got 10 minutes, just about right. And step 9, Dave and I've done the amends. I've gone to my parents. I went to my sons. They were young. And I think what I've done now is done a living amends and just tried to be the best mom I could be. My kids were 14 and 16 when I got sober, and they weren't impressed with sobriety. I don't think they were impressed with drunkenness either, but they weren't that impressed with sobriety. And I made my amends. I made my amends to my husband. I didn't resent my kids. They were not on my resentment list. They were on my harms done list. And I made amends to them. I'm so grateful that I left my husband and God took care of him. He found a beautiful woman and he remarried because I just left home. And my parents, my dad lived 1 year and 1 month after I got sober. And one of the things that I want to say, if there's anybody new in here, if you're newly in your sobriety, if you're just getting to step 9, don't wait. Don't wait. Because my daddy was so proud of me. And he was so proud I was sober in NAA. And I'm so grateful I got to make amends to him. I made amends to my mom. I did just what JD's doing right now with her parents. I lived at different places since my dad's. He died when he was 60, so he died a long time ago. He died in 78. So he died a long time ago. But I made sure I took care of my mother. And she lived in her house by herself until she was 87 years old. That's a kind of stock I come from. That's what she did. And I'd go to see her, just like Janie's going to see her parents now. And those amends we make. Dave and I've had a lot of financial amends. Oh my God. I mean, Dave was a computer scientist working for a computer firm, and we bought a house, and everything looked good. And the next thing we know, the bottom falls out of aerospace in Southern California, and everybody on our block is selling their house. We ended up foreclosing our house, and we had a lot of debt. It was terrible. And we ended up having a bankruptcy. And I was so embarrassed about that. And I told Frank Honeycutt one time, I said, I can't go speak anymore. I've had a bankruptcy. I said, what will people think of me if they found out I had a bankruptcy? He says, Polly, you're in AA. And Dave and I paid every bit of that back. Except for what we couldn't pay back, credit cards do different things. So we found different ways to give money. And I still do it. I still do that for people because some of it I couldn't pay back, but I could help somebody else do something with what I had. And that's kind of how I made that amends. I still kind of do that today. I'm trying not to because I may have to, you know, we don't know what's happening. So I'm trying to be, you know, more thrifty. So life has been a ride. It has been an experience. And these steps and Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams and expectation. I looked at Dave one day and I said, you know, just because we drank too much whiskey, we've got to see the world. That's what AA has done, has we got to see the world. And I came here to Alcoholics Anonymous and I fell in love. I absolutely fell in love with you. And I loved AA. And there was nothing that I wouldn't do for AA. There was nothing. If AA asked me to do anything, my answer was yes. I just couldn't not do it. And I couldn't say no to AA. But I've had to do different today. And I've had to, my life is not the same. And what I have to do is I can't do the things that I used to do. And that's been difficult for me. And it's like, I'm just, I'm just holding on for dear life, you know, for all the things that I love, that I love. But it's a different season. It's a different life. And I'm having to learn at 82 years old to accept. I feel like a newcomer. I feel like a newcomer of having to change the way I lived and do it differently. And little by little, I've still got, you know, I've still got claw marks on just about all of it, but it's getting better. And I'm getting more resigned to know that one of the things, I think 8 and 9 are steps, big forgiveness steps. We have to forgive. We have to forgive. And probably the only person, and in this inventory I did a few months ago with Marty, what has happened is there was one person that I never, ever forgave, and that person was me. I could never forgive myself. I couldn't forgive what I did to my boys. I couldn't forgive. And so I think today, I don't think I, you know, you just have to learn. I didn't know that that was such a big deal. But what is happening is I'm learning through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and through the people who are there directing me. I have a wonderful director, my sponsor. And what I'm learning to do is to forgive myself for feeling the way I feel sometimes, which I understand is an appropriate feeling for what's happening in my life. And that, I have to keep saying that. This is an appropriate feeling for what's happening in my life. And it's okay to feel like that. It's just not okay to beat yourself up and destroy yourself for having the feeling. So that's kind of where I am today, and that's kind of what's going on in my life, and I'm so excited to find out what God has next. Thank you. Love you.